Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio. It's Rog! It's Tuesday. Not just any Tuesday, but the one in which the 2023 January transfer window has trademark just slammed shut. We've just lived the final hour, happy panic hour, as it's known by the agents. My Lord, this transfer deadline day, a record breaker for the Premier League, the last chance to make seismic change, to strengthen your hand like the river in Holdham. It's Fabrizio Romano's bar mitzvah. It's soccer themed and the whole world's invited. What a day. One seemingly sponsored by NetJets and Uber Black. Lots of whisking players in convoys from airports. I feel like I spent all day just staring at Sabitzer in his limo going on that eternal highway to Old Trafford, a day of jostling for power and adjusting the squad balance, a day in which more money was spent in the January transfer window by Premier League teams than any other time in history, most of it by Todd Burley, a day in which Jorginho began a Chelsea player and ended up in Arsenal Red, following a pass blazed by Peter Cech, David Luiz and Yossi Benayoun before him. Day in which United's midfield got 100% more dapper Dan with the arrival of Marcel Sabitzer's moustache, with which Marcel Sabitzer came free. And then jaw-droppingly, Enzo Fernandez late on an enormous move. Enormous. Capping a transfer window for the ages by Todd Burley, who paid Benfica's $120 million release clause for a player Benfica paid $15 million for last summer. This is the end of an era for Everton Football Club. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Weston McKinney's new Leeds love fest. Was that the biggest American transfer news, bar Gail King's, to CNN? And we're going to do it live here on AMP with my special guest, Tom Bogert, mighty Thomas Scoops. If you're here with us on AMP, request to call in. We'll move you to the stage with your questions. One note, we can only have five of you up on stage at once. So if you don't get to up immediately, just stay patient. God, I need a hug. If you're not listening to us live on AMP, do you even, Fabrizio? Download the app. Links all over our social. You can listen to it on your Alexa. Just say, Alexa, play Men in Blazers. But first, a toast. I want to begin by raising my first bud of the day to Newcastle United, who tonight, joyous, generational scenes, really. They beat Southampton 2-1 tonight, 3-1 on aggregate, to reach their first domestic cup final since 1999. And it wasn't easy tonight. G. Maresh, a second half red card, nervy down the stretch. Southampton were really game. But at the final whistle, St. James Park was rocking, delirious, making the first of what I believe will be so many memories that will last generations way up north. Yes, they've been powered by Saudi national state money, which soils all it touches. But also believe, you know, if you can't see the joy on Mickey Almiron's face reveling in this moment, if you cannot savour that of the fans who have truly suffered in the wilderness, footballingly and economically, for decades, then you do not have a pulse. So to them, I raise a glass. And now to the transfer window. We will take all your questions in a moment. Come and be with us on stage. I'm going to run through the top news of the day. Well, not top to begin with, but the most hilariously, devastating. Everton Football Club are a meme club. We are with Dogecoin, with GameStop. First of all, watching Sean Dyche take Everton training. It's been remarkably surreal. Surreal watching him via the club's own channels, the photos and videos that they post, making sure the players train with their socks pulled up, their shin pads on, then laughing as he ran them ragged and they keeled over. Lads, new invention that you're not familiar with. It's called running till you puke. Oh, but transfer day was a dog's dinner for Everton, while Southampton and Bournemouth rolled in the new signings, six new pieces for the Cherries. Some fascinating goal scorers they brought in. Everton were shunned by almost everyone. Anthony Elanga, Ziyech, Conor Gallagher, Thorgan Hazard, Olivier Giroud, Ismael Assar, even Mitch Batshuayi. He preferred to stay for Batshi, a stable club. God bless you, Onana, the only player in the world who wants to hang out with us. Him not leaving was almost like a new signing. But I will say, our owner, Mashiri, has destroyed Everton Football Club, turned it into the laughingstock. I do believe, Tom, maybe us together, collectively, should start a GoFundMe and we should found FC Everton, the Phoenix Club, who will enter the league at the bottom of the pyramid, like FC United and Manchester, but live up to the values that all Blues care about. Having said that, to willful deception, I've convinced myself Sean Dyche is the greatest manager since Frank Lampard was on his first day. It's funny how that works. Let's hit the real headlines. More on Weston McKennie and the American invasion at Leeds in a moment with my guest, Tommy Bogart. But first, today's headlines and the biggest deals of the day happened around Chelsea Football Club. First, Enzo Fernandez to Chelsea from Benfica. Oh, the delirious World Cup winner for $129 million. Yes, $129 million big ones after a long negotiation, not just about fee. He had a release clause, which after low ball offers, ultimately Burnley paid. The negotiations were about the amount of time it would be paid over. Chelsea obviously trying to spread every fee over as many years as possible for financial fair play accounting purposes. Astonishing sum, though, for a player who, remember, moved just this summer from River Plate to Benfica for $15 million. That's how much he cost Benfica and has only played 17 club appearances since. Chelsea have now spent over $745 million since Todd Boehly took over. That's more than every team put together in Spain, Germany, Italy and France. That in itself is a seismic shift of the footballing balance of power. Yes, it's always been tilted towards the Premier League, but never more than in this moment. He spent more than it cost to buy the entire West Ham organisation. And remember, Chelsea were the reigning Club World Cup champions when he brought them. $400 million in this transfer window alone. Hey, Nick Harris, the journalist, tweeted, that's $172 million more than Brentford have spent in their entire history ever. Crazy days. There's a lot in what I've just said about the balance of power within the Premier League, the balance of power vis-a-vis Europe. Really an FFP-defined window for Todd Boehly, who, you know, we can talk about how he's pulled it off, what his goal is. A lot of people inside English football say that their plan is to increase the value of the club to a giddy extent by stacking the roster with value. But man, from afar, it really is like watching Elon Musk overpay for Twitter. These dealings, woof. Other Chelsea moves. How are you feeling, Chelsea fans? I would love to know if you are there. Come on up on stage. Other Chelsea moves. Ziyech left on loan to Paris Saint-Germain. Conor Gallagher, strangely enough, didn't fancy destroying his career of a move up north to Everton. And Amari Hutchison, the 19-year-old English-born Jamaican international, heads to West Brom on loan and fulfilling a lifelong dream of playing alongside Daryl DK. Footnote to Chelsea, interesting. No move at all for Christian Pulisic. That AC Milan move, which was rumoured 10 days ago, did not actualise. That rumour will no doubt now move to the summer window. But to your league-leading Arsenal, no Caicedo move. Huge respect to Brighton, who would not blink and sell their asset on the cheap. So needing cover for Partey and Xhaka, with Elneny now injured for the rest of the season, a new hero arrived. We are wrote to find out that Jorginho had moved from Chelsea for $15 million. A little bit of Brazilian-Italian experience and steely flair. He was out of contract in the summer, hence the price. And it's fascinating. Arsenal fans, some are elated by his arrival. Some are frustrated. Seems like Caicedo out of the Kroenke price range. Or that Arsenal just fancied themselves some hoppity-skippity in their penalty shooting. Some intriguing pickup, though. Is he agent Jorginho dispatched by Chelsea? Could he be Willian, part two? But David Ornstein reported that this move has gone down so bloody well inside the Arsenal squad. There's a feeling, he said, that the midfielder brings technical ability, tactical understanding and experience for the title bid. This is a man, remember, who's won Champions Leagues. He helped Italy win the Euros. Man, what a feeling for Jorginho, though. You know, one minute he's playing out a season mid-table, the next he's just been handed a great chance of a Premier League winner's medal and move from that constipated log jam over at Chelsea. I do wonder what it says about the long term for Arsenal, though. Is Jorginho just a short-term fix? Well, a club going for Declan Rice in the summer? We will see. There is a great video of Cucurella doing a promo video for Puma this morning. They say to him, "Who's the smartest Chelsea player?" And he immediately goes, "Jorginho." And the interviewer immediately tells him on camera that Jorginho has just become an Arsenal player. And his reaction is really, it's beautiful. God bless Todd Boehly selling, according to Cucurella, his smartest player to a rival. Manchester City. How Cancelo has joined Bayern Munich on loan until the end of the season, with the option to make that move permanent in the summer for $70 million. Somewhat of a shocking trajectory for old Hal. Gent, remember, made the PFA Premier League Team of the Year for the last two seasons. A true giant. Such a dominant force tactically. A really heartbeat of modern Pep City ball. But the news, fascinating. Pep briefed the press. City or City briefed the press. The Pep was disappointed by the fullback's attitude when given decreased game time for Manchester City. Makes him sound like a Portuguese Gio Reyna. I'm joking. There is a little bit of difference between Pep doing this and Greg in terms of, you know, track record, power leverage, context. But the last time Cancelo was on the pitch for a City win, more than 3 months ago at Leicester, you get the drift. He was not long for this City world. During Pep's post-match interview after the Arsenal win, when he was asked about Nathan Ake scoring, and he said, "There is not one person in the locker room who is not happy. Maybe one." And now we know who that is. There were rumours yesterday of a shock Manchester City move for US international Anthony Robinson. Talk of a $26 million move in the tabloids for the greatest single Scouse American in world history. Not sure how you feel about that one, American fans. Would Anthony have gone on the field? Would he have Zach Steffen at City? Anyway, the move didn't happen. Pep evidently didn't make the move when he found out Tim Ream wasn't part of a package deal. Across Manchester to United, a morning which began with honestly terrible news for people who like unicorns and joy and happiness. Christian Eriksen, who went out the weekend's FA Cup tie on crutches after a brutal challenge by that bastard Andy Carroll, still a Liverpool player at heart, has been knocked out until spring, 3 months, I believe, is reward. Donny van de Beek, for what that's worth, already out all season. Oh, an awful, awful loss, Christian Eriksen. Got to say, as a neutral, that gent has added such joy, such quality, and for United, consistent creativity. consistent quality to the Ten Hag project. And Manchester United still on for four competitions this season. They're playing a clip of almost like a game every 3 days, twice a week. That's a mountain they must climb. Also, worst news for United, Harry Maguire is staying, but holding out for a hero. Oh, enter Big Sabby, Marcel Sabitzer, the Lord of Linz, on loan from Bayern Munich. No option to buy. Oh, what a pickup. An attacking midfielder with the heart of an Austrian warrior, the moustache of a romantic landscape painter, the 28-year-old midfielder, two-footed, technically sophisticated, a great passer, got a foot on him. Bought by Bayern Munich in 2021 for $16 million. Only had 7 starts this season. So much midfield talent there at Bayern. Kimmich, Muller, Goretzka, Musiala. And I can't wait to see his dashing blade in the Premier League. Quick word on Liverpool. Turns out that Cody Gakpo was the one big January acquisition. No reinforcements incoming for Liverpool's midfield. That on the day that the news was dark for Jurgen Klopp. Konate will be out for 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. Liverpool centre-back will miss games against Wolves, Everton, Newcastle United, and maybe Real Madrid in the Champions League. Oh, saving themselves for Jude Bellingham, question mark. In other news, PSG has agreed to a loan deal for Keylor Navas to Nottingham Forest. The Costa Rican goalkeeping legend, CONCACAF Thunder, is on his way to the Premier League. 110 caps for the Ticos from San Isidro del General to the River Trent. Crystal Palace signed energising midfielder Nayua Hamada, 20-year-old from Stuttgart. Oh, French starlet in the making. Spurs brought in Sporting Lisbon fullback Pedro Porro, double P, and let Matt Doherty go the Trippier route. Contract terminated for because they have too many loans currently, and he was signed by Atletico on a free. Poor Jed Spence, oh, the kid who joined last summer for a deal rising to $25 million. He's only played 6 times and was dispatched to French side Rennes on loan for the rest of the season. His welcome to Rennes video is truly a heartbreaking thing to watch. He looks bloody miserable. It is like sadder than The Notebook. He hardly cracked a smile. And I want to talk Weston McKennie, because it is, if you are American, it is the news over the window, fills me with joy. But let me welcome my guest as he unmutes. Oh, it's great to have him back. Almost synonymous here at Men in Blazers with the transfer window. One of the joys of this last month has been watching yet again so many young Americans and American-based players make their moves, visa applications flying everywhere. And it's a joy to welcome back an old friend now, a gent at the centre of the American end of the transfer window shitstorm of rumours and gossip and overreaching. You know him from Twitter, where he breaks stories and drops boge bombs, direct from Wall Township down the Jersey Shore. It's Football Insider. It's my friend, the moustache of truth, the one and only Tom Bogert. Tommy Scoops, welcome.
Raj, thank you so much, as always, for the wonderful, wonderful intro. It's too kind. I need to start. I need to pay you to make that, you know, my ringtone or something. I think that would be a good investment for me. What's your rate? Very, very high.
You deserve it all. You have elevated, I think, on the American end, a sense of what is going on and the shifting tectonics of player movement. Oh, and there is so much to discuss. So let's dive right into it. Weston McKennie. It's been magnificent to watch him yesterday descend into Leeds from Juventus. True joy to witness for American eyes. He will wear number 28, can make his debut as soon as Sunday at Nottingham Forest. Loan plus $35 million with an option to buy. Add to that $30 million for Aronson. I think you tweeted this. $18 million in add-ons for Adams. The $35 million purchase option for McKennie. And for $85 million, you can get a dynamic American midfield. Really a beautiful sight for all who care about the future of the men's game in the United States is unveiling, having Tyler march in, sweet denim jacket. Tyler, who's been in Leeds for all the 6 months, but really has assimilated into Yorkshire life like a local. Weston, slightly shell-shocked he looked throughout yesterday. A lot of A lot of his humour at Juventus, I think, came from being a Yank abroad, a fish out of water, you know, trying to explain the ranch dressing to Cellini. But you don't get away with any of that in Yorkshire. It's a place you fit in by working hard, playing hard, giving your all. Weston can do it. And if he does, the Leeds fans will love him. It can be an unforgiving place if not. Tommy, what do you know about the move? What's your understanding? Give us some colour.
Yeah, this is an awesome move. Like, first and foremost, like, before getting even too much deeper, just the idea of Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, and Brandon Aaronson playing together is going to be phenomenal. All these players fit so well into Jesse March's system. It's just a joy. Like, you know, people have made jokes about Leeds United, States of America, you know, some people in good faith and other people in bad faith, and talking about how Americans are ruining the game or how it's marketing or whatever. I will quickly point out that, you know, Wolverhampton has signed about 400 Portuguese players, a few Portuguese managers. Everybody talked about how cool and how smart that was. And then when you get three Americans at Leeds United, it's an outrage. So I've enjoyed that, and that's been fun. And look, I'll come and trade away with elbows. How's that for a start?
You know, I do think this is fascinating. We've talked a lot about the Weston move on the podcast yesterday, breaking it down, and I'm sure there'll be questions about it in a minute. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about were the ramifications for MLS, which is a league that is growing so much, so quickly. There's the Apple deal, which is groundbreaking and innovative and, you know, a massive moment which could go, I mean, it could be rocket fuel, it could be, I mean, who knows? It's an experiment is really the word. And I bet there were some real marketing meetings at MLS headquarters today. You know, I've told a story on the pod about a meeting I had with a major ESPN figure 15 years ago who was convinced that MLS was the future of football in the United States. We had the sit-down meeting. It wasn't John Skipper, for those guessing. And he said, you know, he's like, who is Houston, a Houston kid, going to buy a shirt for? Real Madrid or the Houston Dynamo, who play in his own backyard and play their games in prime time? And I was like, oh my God, Real Madrid, man. Americans like the best. And ultimately, I think we've seen that has kind of carried through. Americans do love the best. They are drawn to, you know, the Premier League, they're drawn to the Champions League, you know, Liga MX in a different story, but also doing massive numbers across the United States. And Leeds, you know, when there was one or two Americans scattered on kind of, you know, crap teams or innocuous teams across Europe, it was no big deal for MLS. But when a Premier League team is about to field three Americans and is managed by an American and about to become majority owned by an American ownership group, my God, that is must watch, not just for now, you know, when Leeds could play Fulham in the next round of the FA Cup in a game which really should be played at the Rose Bowl, it's so bloody American. But you play this trend forward 10 years, Tom Bogert. Essentially, I'm talking about the brain drain. Even as MLS grows, and it is growing, some incredibly conceptual threat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't frame it that way because I believe that there is plenty of room for soccer fans to enjoy it all. I think that, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to watch Leeds, particularly if you're a Premier League fan, if you're a U.S. national team fan. But not all the people who watch the Premier League or the national team watch MLS. So I don't see it as fans being taken away from the league or it, that being a bad sign. I think that's just another opportunity to pull fans in. Like, hey, Weston McKennie was in the FC Dallas Academy. He never made an MLS appearance, but that's the career path he took. Tyler Adams spent a year with the Red Bulls second team, a few years with the Red Bulls first team, and then moved. Brandon Aaronson was, you know, a beautiful story at Philadelphia Union, and then Paxton Aaronson behind him. And these players then went. So, like, I think that it can all work in conjunction. It's definitely like a beauty pageant type answer where everything is wonderful and we're all happy and positive. But I really don't view it as anything other than a win for soccer in general and American soccer.
God, I hope that you are right. One other Leeds note, honorary American, Jack Harrison, who really, really wanted to move to Leicester. It seems he did not get one, but Leeds, my God. I love this comment from GFOP at Trevor Ben. who really captures this moment. He or she tweeted us and said, "People from the United States now officially don't have to show their passport if they fly directly to Leeds." And Tommy, I am a firm believer that the world needs more. Aronson, one of the most fascinating moves in this window from a US perspective. Paxton Aronson, Brendan's 19-year-old brother, the second greatest male player ever to be born in Medford, New Jersey, moving to Frankfurt in the Bundesliga from the Philadelphia Union. What an academy. My God, what right now, you know, Dallas, we've sung their praises, but the Philadelphia Union really becoming the lungs of our men's youth teams. But take us behind that move. And what should we read into the fact that the new club were happy to let him slip off for a bit on USC team duty?
So Paxton Aronson, scouts have been coming to the Philadelphia Union to watch him train before he made his MLS debut. Like when he was he was with the second team, but training with the first team. Wow. He was widely known, and not just because Aronson was his last name. It was, you know, his own merit as well. Obviously, the last name helps, and the floppy hair helps when Brendan was doing great things. But these two are very different players. I try to reiterate that all the time. I think fans who got to watch Paxton with the national team can kind of understand that these they have different qualities. And again, he's not just a regeneration of his brother. But again, like, he didn't play a ton of minutes this year or last year for the Philadelphia Union. That didn't matter with the price. That didn't matter with the teams interested. Salzburg really wanted him. I'm sure Leeds were there too. And then, you know, I can say that they were interested. But Frankfurt were there from the beginning as well. They really, really wanted him. They presented the Union with obviously a very good financial package, which is $4 million up front. I think another $4 million in add-ons and a very big sell-on clause, which is obviously key for the Union. And even more so for the Union and Aronson, they presented a plan. We play with two number 10s. This is what we want. We're bringing Paxton. We're not going to loan him out. We want him to be training with the team, play the second team, see what happens. And then in the summer, we'll reassess, and hopefully he's ready to compete for minutes with the first team rather than alone. So they loved all of that. When he got to Frankfurt, Frankfurt spent a lot of money, and they knew he was a very good player. They knew that his potential is very high. They know he's very talented. When he got into training, they were like, holy hell, how was this kid not playing? They knew that, like, they weren't criticizing Philly. They knew that it was because Daniel Gosdag was the starting number 10. Not only was he an MVP candidate and one of the best players in the league last year, he was never hurt, never tired. So there, it was really difficult to get Paxton Aronson on the field. But that's kind of like, they were like, you know, we knew he was good, knew he was, you know, going to be ready. But like, wow, we did not know that this was the level that he was going to be at day one. That being said, they weren't going to push him into the first team for these first couple of games. Like, he could have been the best player in training for a week. I don't think anything would have changed to get him on the field for Frankfurt in the Bundesliga. So U.S. Soccer contacted them, you know, looked into it. And Frankfurt said, you know, yeah, I think that's great. He can get his U.S. national team debut. Frankfurt aren't silly. They understand that now Paxton Aronson is a national team player. Every time that they talk about Paxton Aronson, he's a national team player now. He's not a youth international. So that's another reason why, like, look, if you're not going to play in this game, go with the national team. Go get your first cap. Go enjoy it. Come back and get settled in. He hadn't really been settled into Germany because he joined the club in the Middle East for their training camp as the Bundesliga was getting ready to return. So he's just moving into his new living space in Frankfurt. Like, his family are helping him out. Like, it's, you know, I imagine a lot of IKEA furniture being put together as, again, Paxton Aronson settles into his new life in Frankfurt.
God, it's like dropping your kid off for college, what they are doing with that kid, apart from he's playing in Bundesliga first team squad. Godspeed to that gentleman as he bulks up, hardens, and really challenges himself. That is a storyline of the second half of the season. I cannot wait to watch. Gaga Slonina, 18 years old, just made his debut for the US team. Tony Miola has mullet hairs that are older than Gaga Slonina. Chelsea also willing to let him report for international duty, but they have kept him, or they have until now, kept him training with the first team. What are you hearing about his present and his future?
Yeah, Gaga Slonina is another one, obviously a long-term target for Chelsea. Even under the previous ownership, there was talks in the winter, and then everything happened for Todd Boehly to take over. And the scouts who were still there, everybody still liked him. They ended up getting the deal done with Chicago. There have been a few talks about, hey, maybe he could stay in Chicago for another year. Particularly, he had a pretty tough stretch of errors in May or June. Again, he was a 17-year-old boy. While Chelsea were trying to sign him, and Poland were trying to make him commit his national future. Like, it's okay. That happens to a 17-year-old goalkeeper. There's a reason why 17-year-old goalkeepers don't often get minutes in top divisions. So he was able to play through that. And it was, the thoughts was, hey, maybe he goes back on loan to Chicago, gets more first team minutes and continues to develop. He came and came to join Chelsea training with the first team. He's even spoke about it, that he's already raised his level, that he's enjoying the competition.
In what way? What are his weaknesses that you've seen in MLS that you believe he's working on, his strengths and his weaknesses?
Consistency. I know that's difficult to try to prove in training, but you know, he was always liable for an error. So it was a little bit with his handling. Like any other young goalkeeper, there's always work you can do with your feet. But for him, it was just eliminating errors and like, again, little ones with handling and mistakes with his feet. But again, nothing out of the ordinary for a player of his age. And he was able to join training. They decided they wanted to keep him at Chelsea until the summer. They'll reassess then about another loan. My assumption is that the loan would be in Europe. I'm not sure that it makes a ton of sense for him to come back to Chicago. Like, he's already had this experience. He's going to be playing with the Chelsea second team, the U21, I believe, for the Premier League 2 now. And then if he does go on loan in the summer, I'd assume that it's going to be at another European destination to get him a new experience and to get him new development.
Come and play striker for Everton, Gaga, you little beauty. A late, great MLS transfer. You actually broke the news that Barcelona this morning were in talks with the LA Galaxy for Mexican right back Julian Araujo, born in Lompoc, California. And then tonight, you announce he is making the move. Some dissonance in terms of the terms of it. I don't know if you've got an update on that, but it is incredible. A return to Barcelona for Julian. Joined the Barcelona Academy in 2017. He is now back. What are you expecting? Is it Barca A? Is it Barca B? Still some fantastic and wonderful journey.
Yeah, so it was the Barcelona Academy in Arizona, where there have been a lot of players to kind of come through. Youth National, Diego Luna went to Real Salt Lake. There's been a lot of talented Americans. I will point out, this is super fluid. There's some reports in Spain that there's worries whether the paperwork was filed in time. I was told all day this is going to go down to the wire. And slightly naive, I was like, I mean, really? You're like, how could that happen with something like this? Within the last hour before the deadline, a new agreement was reached. Instead of a loan with a purchase option, it was just going to be an outright permanent deal for around $4 million. At the time that we're talking, as I'm trying to keep an eye on my messages and stuff, I haven't heard an update on the paperwork. I was told 2 minutes before the deadline, almost at 1 yard line. And again, there's reports coming out in Spain that there's concerns with Barcelona about whether the paperwork was filed in time. So this one, I don't have a definitive update. It's not done, I guess, yet, but it's not off yet. So we're kind of in that difficult limbo where I'm going to talk about something that, again, in 15 minutes, hopefully it'll be resolved, right?
Break some news on this, amp, you beauty, as the Spaniards try and work out how to fake that fax, time and date stamp. Final one, almost a curiosity. The incredible story yesterday of Nathan Apuko, 21-year-old, US-based Ghanaian forward, played for Syracuse, NCAA champion in December, led the Orange to their first championship in program history. He was the playoff MVP. Also led the USL League Two side Ventura County Fusion to their title. Also MVP there. And he is going to Leicester City. He is going to a Premier League team, immediately being loaned to the Foxes, Belgian sister club, OH Leuven. Tom, this is a curious footballing dream story. Syracuse Santiago Munez territory. I think he was projected to be one of the top picks in MLS draft, but he's gone this really unorthodox route. Can you give us the backstory? Was this just a cheap, no real risk pickup by Leicester City, no lose? Or is this just a new reality that we should get used to in terms of college scouting?
I'm not sure that there's going to be a whole lot more stories of a Premier League club signing a player from college. That's what makes it so special. It was super unique because he went to Syracuse because professional options were a little bit limited as he was coming through around when COVID was hitting. So it was difficult for trials to come through. The family wanted, if you're not going to be playing professionally, getting an education would be wonderful. Going to the United States would be wonderful. Syracuse head coach Ian McIntyre continues to talk about that this is just a special young man. He's, they knew they were getting a talent. He was obviously really good. He was signed for Leicester. And every time that I've kind of asked or talked about this player, it goes back to, this is a special young man. We're so happy for him. Like, there were talks for him to sign a deal with MLS to be draft eligible. That kind of didn't come through. There are scouts looking at college play, particularly these top tier programs. Syracuse just won the national title. So it's definitely not one I think is going to be replicated very often. It's just a really nice story.
Oh, Midlands Jerry McNamara. Yeah, we have actually seen this before and it didn't work out well. I think it was Jacob Montez who went from Georgetown to Crystal Palace. A couple of big Ewing fans, no doubt, down South London way. A couple of loans in before being dealt to Botafogo in Brazil. So let's hope it ends better for Nathan Apuko. I love that story. Quick update, if we should have a sting for this, like we're doing in the Sky Studios, Ziyech to PSG, which was officially, here we go. By the way, I spoke to Fabrizio a couple of weeks ago, and I did say to him, I always assumed, here we go. I heard him say, here we go, on his on an Instagram post for the first time ever recently. And I was shocked. I've always, when I've read it in my voice, I've always thought, here we go, was like at the end of this long negotiation, this long back and forth. I always thought it was more like a, oh, here we go. That's how I've always read it in my voice. When he's tweeted it, like, here, and when he said it, he's like, here we go. And I said to him, I'm like so shocked. For like the past 2 years, I've been reading it as like, here we, but no, he brings it. Here we go, Ziyech. And my God, there's news that paperwork technicalities may prevent that loan going through. By the way, J Dubs has just texted me, most Rog thing ever to make here we go seem down and depressing. God, I'd bite your arm off for a here we go for Everton Football Club, J Dubs. But we are going to take your questions in 1 second. GFOP's last quick one, Tommy Bogues. Who are the next young Americans that we should keep our eyes on who are ready to make a move from the US to Europe? Real quick one. Who are the next baby Eagles who will fly our nest?
I would definitely look at the players that will be representing the country at the U20 World Cup. Paxton Anson has already left. So Cade Cowell is the first one on that list. Jack McLean is another one. Caleb Wiley. These are three extremely talented players. There's already been a bid rejected for Wiley from Atlanta. Cowell has already had a bid rejected by San Jose, and Jack McGlynn, there's at least been talks and interest from a lot of clubs, from the Philadelphia Union, going a little bit above that age profile. John Tolkien, who just made his senior national team debut. I think that boy is ready to walk into, I don't know why Red Bull Salzburg haven't bought him yet. To be fair, I don't know what their situation is at left back. I think that he is ready for a move to a team like Salzburg, you know, a team like Club Brugge, something like that. I think that he's ready right now.
Oh, I love John Tolkien. I hope he goes to Everton. We need better hair. He looks like, if you've not seen him, he looks like he's ripped off the set of Stranger Things 11. Like, just like that kid is solving crimes while just burning up and down the wing. I could not love him more. Who was after Cowell, by the way? Another great, I mean, one of the most unorthodox looking footballers. He looks genuinely like he'd hang out at a blues traveler gig and try and sell you a dime bag of weed. Who was after Double C in Europe? Do we know which team?
Yeah, it was Reims who had a bid rejected in the summer. And my go-to comparison for Cade Cowell is that he looks like the villain in a rollerblading movie set in California.
My God, John Popper, sign this harmonica, says Cade Cowell as he tries to sell it on with his dime bags outside the theatre. You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke cold brew coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham fortress known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke espresso blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke cold brew coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Now, to the Q&A portion of the show. GFOPs, you know the drill. If you've got a question, request to call in. We'll move you to the stage. Just stay muted until we call your name, at which point click the little, frankly, quite annoying red button atop your avatar to unmute. You need tiny little fingers. Come be with us. Stage is packed. I should have, you know, with the White Sox, when I used to watch them when I moved to Chicago and the bases were loaded, they used to shout the sacks are packed with socks. We need a phrase like that for when the stage is packed. Stay in the waiting room. I promise we will get to you. But let's start this transfer window off by welcoming up at Schmeg164. Schmeg, you're better than the other 163 Schmegs. Come and tell us where you are and what's your question.
Hey, Raj, thanks. I'm Megan from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Yinza Megan.
Yeah, Yinza Megan, that's right. So I'm a Chelsea fan, and today obviously was big chaos, but it kind of reminded me of when Guggenheim took over the Dodgers. If you remember, they did all of this like crazy wheeling and dealing right after, and then they like, you know, they went with the data analytics reform also, and it kind of seems like that's what Chelsea's doing right now, which like for better or for worse, like it... You know, the young players are making sense, but like at these price tags and with different financial regulations, you know, maybe not. But I actually wanted to ask about the Premier League. So there was all this talk about the Super League and things like that. But is the Premier League the Super League now? Like people are leaving PSG for Nottingham Forest. And I mean, I know the situations are a little bit different, you know, as far as like goalkeeping and injuries and stuff like that. But are we there?
You know, I want to ask you very quickly. Old Schmeg 164, better than all other Schmegs who came before her. As a Chelsea fan, and I will answer your question because I think it is a fascinating one. But as a Chelsea fan, how are you feeling tonight? Are you just like roaring, like we're going to win the league? Or are you like, holy crap, we're in 10th place. We are just spending so much money. We essentially put a sign on our club that says, if you want to wheel and deal with us, hold out because we will pay any price. That's what you know, Chelsea have essentially said, yeah, we will, you know, just rip us off, jack us off, just hold on, and we want. How are you between delirium and like slight confusion, where are you right now?
Is it a cop out to say both? Because that's how I feel. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. You know, like this obviously makes a Champions League run, which we are still in. It's like one of the only things that we're still in. You know, a lot more attainable depending on, you know, registrations with those three spots or something I was reading earlier from like The Athletic. But also I'm like, holy crap, how much money is this?
Yeah, I mean, it is an insane thing. Well, there's two things. There's the size of the money, and then externally, speaking to people inside of football, there's almost the scattershot lack of any strategy. It almost looks from the outside that they've done everything that Manchester United did really over the past 10 years, just signing an exquisite corpse of players just like a massive number of big name players. But like the idea of how all these are going to fit together still remains to be seen. If I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be like, oh my God, this is the stuff of dreams. But it's not quite clear that it's Graham Potter's actual dream. It's the one that's doing the dreaming. And if you start to get rid of Graham Potter and bring other managers in, does it just become like a cycling, wheeling and dealing realm of madness? Look, there's two questions.
Isn't that like what has been happening? So like it feels stupid to go down that same path, you know, like all these things were happening under, you know, Roman. So maybe I hope that it's not happening again.
I mean, Roman brought to originally, you know, to stylings. Mourinho came in, a lot of money was spent, but my God, it was a, you know, it fit the vision of someone that they were staying with. But there is chaos within chaos. And with Burley, when he appointed himself interim sporting director, you know, it was quite, within football, it was like, oh my God, there's no plan. Let's just jack this gentleman now. He has relinquished that role. So let's see and give the benefit of the doubt to the new team and some time. I think this is clearly one for the future. You've asked two questions. First is an implied question, which is how the hell are Chelsea doing this within financial fair play? And I mean, I'd say two things. You don't listen to me for tax planning. Yeah, I'm not H&R Block. My understanding of amortized accounting is I'll admit, limited. I think Chelsea are doing it in two ways. First is they have sold over the past couple of years a huge number of players, Tammy Abraham, Kurt Zouma, Fikayo Tomori, Timo Werner, Gehi, Eden Hazard, which has given them a really nice profit, although we don't think of Chelsea and profit in the same sentence. And then there's the amortizing. You know, what they've done is, yes, they've paid ridiculous amounts from like Mudrich, an enormous amount, but the contracts are as startling almost as the numbers. I think Mudrić came in on an 8.5-year contract. So that's all structured for accountants and FFP purposes, that you're almost spreading over 8.5 years. It works out at just over, I think, $14.5 million a year. So there's been a lot of creative accounting, massive, massive number of bets, but that's some. It is startling. And I dropped a number of equivalents. When you go up the Sears Tower and you're in the elevator, they have in the elevator like the Taj Mahal. They start off when you're on the third floor, you're now taller than a giraffe. By the time you're on the 25th floor, you're higher than the Taj Mahal, higher than the Eiffel Tower, higher than... And you know, Chelsea's number is all of these statistics are just like that. It's more than the, you know, the rest of the Big Five, the Brentford statistic that they've spent just in this window, 74 million more than Brentford have in their entire existence on. These are startling numbers. And I'm saying that because it is, you know, this is what the Super League was created by two forces. It was created by, well, internally, and this is what's funny, this was pre-Burley, but internally within the Premier League, it was created by Liverpool, Arsenal, and Manchester United, three sports investors from America who realized that they could not compete in an arms race against Manchester City, Abu Dhabi, you know, a petro state, a nation state who owned the club. And then the oligarch who owned Chelsea, they were terrified of Roman Abramovich in the long term too. And then the second force was the Juventuses and Real Madrid's and AC Milan's, who just realized that their, you know, big name brands, global brands, yes, but their island was sinking. La Liga is sinking compared to the Premier League. Really, the Premier League's rising. If you look at that Game of Thrones map at the beginning of Game of Thrones, the Premier League was on a trajectory that they were projecting out 5 years, 10 years. They just financially could not compete. They saw their own demise. And Megan, I mean, you've asked the question, but it's really the answer. It's impossible to see these numbers that have been spent, not just by Chelsea. Look what Bournemouth have done. The amount of money they've spent, the number of players that they have brought in, the teams, as you say, that they brought players in from. You know, when Weston was linked to Arsenal at the beginning of this window, which I didn't find anyone inside football who said that was a serious interest. But Alexi Lalas, when Leeds came in for Weston, Alexi Lalas tweeted, Weston's bigger than Leeds, you know, better than Leeds, I think was his phrase, as if Juventus was a step down from was it, Leeds was a step down from Juventus. The honest truth is, Leeds right now is not a step down from Juventus at all. The Juventus of our imaginations is not the Juventus, particularly not the one we've seen in the last month, financially crippled by the board's Everton-esque decision making, you know, dock points slumbering down the table now. But the amount of money Leeds are able to pay and offer Weston, I think it was a 33% pay rise he's had for his own wages. I think he's on 4 million now. And that is the Premier League. And you project that forward, Megan, it's only going to exponentially increase. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, your question is what I believe we've seen tonight. That is, there's two Premier Leagues. There's the Premier League of the top, and it really is the top seven now, with Newcastle and what they can financially afford. There's a middle Premier League where, you know, Bournemouth, new investors, new owners willing to spend a lot of money. And then you see the Premier League of just the runts of the litter. And I'm not saying this to be funny. Everton Football Club, who could not afford, could not persuade a single player to move in an hour of need. And that's really what we're seeing. I don't think that can hold. You know, with an American sporting mindset, the owners would be like, how can we create parity? We know this cannot. We're going to eat our holes. But there's nothing football loves more than to eat itself in these moments. And we are tonight. We really did see a Super League within bloody Everton football, within the Premier League. And talking to Chelsea, breaking news from David Ornstein at The Athletic. Chelsea got the Enzo Fernandez deal sheet. They asked for an extension to complete the paperwork on his $122 million transfer from Benfica. It's an international transaction, so that gave them another hour to finish the details. I think there's 15 minutes to go. What? Who are we kidding? Do you really think from an economic perspective, the powers of football are going to stop this deal from going through? Everybody bloody needs it. Self-interest needs it. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Come on up, Guna Quake. Come be with us. Tell us where you are and what's your question.
Hi, Rods. Hi, Tom. This is Peter from Gilroy, California, just south of San Jose. So I wanted to ask about, as MLS academies continue to grow, like 5'11 Quakes, with the likes of Kay Chow and Nico Shakiris, who's, I think, set for a bit of a breakout, the aforementioned Emi Ochoa and Cruz Medina, as more teams produce these young American prospects at a higher rate, and players already in Europe continue to do well and perform at a high level, how will the pipeline develop? Previously, players would go to Germany before eventually ending up at Leeds. Do you see top talent development teams like Ajax or Benfica begin to step in, or will a direct pipeline to the top teams in Europe begin to develop?
Thanks. Tommy Boga.
So that's a great question. The best part about all these, the development of all these academies, the development of these players, the different types of profiles, both in terms of, you know, domestic, international, quality, where they're ready at when they're 18 or what they're on the 21, there are so many different pathways, and a lot of different teams in Europe are realizing that. I think that the kind of the last one is Benfica Ajax to be coming in for MLS talent, young MLS talent. I know that, you know, a few top Premier League clubs, I can say with a fact, have a dedicated scout here. They want to sign 18-year-olds from this country. They want to bring them in to develop. But then you have a team like Aston Villa who signs John Duran for 18 million up front, up to 22 million. That wasn't happening 2 years ago for an 18-year-old, 19-year-old.
Just remind us who he is, Tommy.
John Duran spent a year in MLS with the Chicago Fire. He made it after a $2.5 million move from a Colombian club. And then he moves to Aston Villa for up to 22 million. These figures aren't like you go back 15, 20 years ago, US national team players had to go on trial at Derby County to have a chance to sign a contract. And then slowly it's continued to move. So look, you're going to see a lot of players go to Red Bull Salzburg. You're going to see a lot of players go to Club Bruges or some places like this, but you're also going to see Liverpool, Manchester United look at players from MLS. Like there is no one pathway. There is no one size fits all for development. It's not linear. You'll see players leave at 18, or you'll see players like Jesus Ferreira. He signed a very lucrative new contract. He was one of the best players in the league last year, 21 years old. He's going to go to Europe. It doesn't have to be at 18 or 19. It could be a little bit later. Alistair Johnson came through college, turned into a Canadian international. He goes to Celtic for, again, $3.5 million. Like these, there are going to be a few more barriers to break down. And I think Ajax and Benfica are two really good examples. But that's coming. The more players that come through, the more different options, and the more Americans who go to Europe and succeed the way that Tyler Adams and Brandon Aaronson, and you name all of these, put Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, whatever it is, the more that happens, the more players are going to keep going. Like, this isn't going to get less. It's going to be more.
Yeah. When you say not less, it's going to be more. I think of Joe Max Moore, the great power from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who Everton fans call Joe Max Less. By the way, bite your arm off. Still wish Joe Max Moore had come back to Everton in this transfer window. I do believe, like, that is the MLS I want to watch. The one where there's Miggy Almirons coming in, you know, a risk taken on them. They just flourish here and then they move for like 20 million plus. Like that. That is a scintillating MLS, an MLS of young Central and South Americans coming through and being sold on. My God, and Americans and Canadians amongst them. That is genuinely the thrilling kind of MLS that would just, God, I cannot get enough of that in any way, shape or form. At Dan Manco, come on, you get to ask the last question of the night. Come be with us. Tell us where you are and what's your question. Great unmuting, Dan Mankey.
Raj, can you hear me?
I can hear you, you beautiful human being. Tom, where are you, Dan?
I am in Austin, Texas. Frigid Austin, Texas. Sending breakfast taco love to you all up in the Northeast.
We're good now, you gorgeous bloke. Tell us what your question is, Danny, again.
So my question is like the typical U.S. men's national team angst question right now. I am so excited watching all these baby eagles take flight and the former baby eagles becoming more mature eagles in Europe. And oh my God, the United States leads United States of America. You know, I don't have a premier team, but I like to watch the matches and the players. American football. American football completely messed up my sports fandomness that way. My question is bringing it back to the angst that's hanging over. Oh my gosh, all these promising players, they're starting to bloom. They're hitting the right age. And I just have tremendous angst about what's going to happen to this crop, this generation, the best generation of American football players that I've ever seen. What's going to happen to them at the national on the national front, because I think they'll be fine in Europe. They're going to
flourish. Is your question, if I'm understanding it, are we going to be able to defend the World Cup title that we're going to win in 2026? Is that your worry?
my worry is what's going to happen with U.S. soccer.
What's going to happen with U.S. soccer is genuinely an unspooling, unending philosopher's question, which is a little bit like, you know, to answer that as the last question, that would be like an M.C. Escher staircase where we go round and round and round. Right now, I'm in a position of just wanting to think optimistically because the other perspective is too dark to grapple with. So let's zoom in on Weston McKennie. You know, arriving at Leeds. And Tom, I want a quick burst from you on this as well. I'm trying to think through how, that's really where my head is right now. This is a massive moment. It really is. We've had clusters, large numbers of US men's national team players in one squad before. We have, but that was in a very different Premier League, Fulham, where they had five, as Paul Carr told me. This is now, as we answered in the first question, this is the Super League Premier League, and this is a very high stakes. This is a very cutthroat Super League Premier League. I mean, I'm fascinated. It's a question we've not got time for today, but you know, will Leeds now become like Fulham were in the early proto days of Premier League fandom in America, where just Americans by default who are flocking to football just now choose Leeds forever, once and forever? You know, in 50 years' time, will people say, yeah, I'm a Leeds fan, this tattoo, the crescent, why do I have it? There was once a player, Tyler Adams, who, you know, is that how we'll remember Leeds in this moment? I do not know. The Western thing, though, is truly a rock. I mean, we joked on the podcast, was it yesterday, that if this goes badly, as your question is hinting, if this goes bottoms up, then American accents will not be welcome in Leeds for generations. But I don't think it is going to. You know, West Ham, his youth coach at the American national team level when he was under 20s, you know, said that Western was the best player of his generation, of all of them. You know, better than, his upside was better than Pulisic. And he just had to do two things. Number one, he had to focus on a position because he was playing everywhere at Schalke at the time. Really focus on a position, stop being a utility player. And also mentally, really find an ability to focus and be consistent. And you know, watching him at Juventus was thrilling. We all got the clips, you know, the headed goals, the Harry Potter sellies, the lols in the training ground, which are always joyful. But you know, he said himself that the tactical discipline of Italy did not suit him. His quote was, "I did not feel myself always on the field with Juventus, what they were asking him to do." And you know, there's a midfielder in him that loves to do a bit of everything. In a 4-3-3, he can thrive, I have no doubt. You know, in Italy, he was inconsistent. And my fear is Leeds fans will not tolerate that. But if he starts strong, gets those fans behind him at Elland Road, he can sail. You know, he really can. And the thing that really seals it for me is him with Tyler. Tyler is a really sensible leader. He understands Leeds. Speaking to Tyler on the regs, he understood Leeds from the very beginning. He understood what they're looking for. He was never overawed. And ultimately, it's the joy of playing with friends, that freedom that I hope will unlock Weston and allow him to soar, of having a personal connect that he didn't have at Juventus, of being understood and feeling understood, which is so bloody important for these young footballers when they are abroad. But Tommy, how do you see it? Play it forward for me.
The friendship of Tyler Adams is great. You know, it's probably even a little bit better, the fact that he can cover every blade of grass and kind of give McKinney a little bit more freedom to just roam and do his best. Sometimes, like you said, he was inconsistent at Juventus. There was things that didn't suit him. And I think a lot of us said that when he made the move from Schalke. I don't think that we were doubting him. I think a lot of people were questioning whether that was going to be the best fit. And then he was playing right wing back at some times, and he was doing okay. He was doing a job. I don't think Jesse Marsh is going to play him at right wing back. In short, I'm very optimistic. I don't think that there's any real reason not to be at this stage. Leeds have to stay up. They just have to, for better or for worse. This is going to, you know, the Leeds United States of America is going to be a huge joke to a lot of people who are a little bit ignorant to American soccer if they go down. But Jesse Marsh, Brendan Aaronson, Tyler Adams, and Weston McKennie. So this deal, this has to stay up. This has to work. I do believe that it will. I think this midfield options, like Brendan Aaronson is tailed off a little bit. He doesn't have to start every game. Jack Harrison hasn't started every game. He's looked fine when he's played as well. I think that they needed this depth, and Weston McKennie is going to lift this group, a midfield that starts with Adams, McKennie, and then you can put whoever else you want next to him. Hopefully it's Aaronson, that it'll probably be Mark Rocha or whoever else. I think that's a legitimate, really good Premier League.
Oh, inshallah is what I would say. Quick word on Brendan Aaronson. Yeah, I once traveled to see another Aronson, Icelandic Aronson, who was then at Alkmaar in the run-up to the 2014 World Cup. And he had just played in a Europa League campaign for Alkmaar. They'd gone really deep. When I saw him there, he was like, God, you know, I've just played 60-plus games. I can't remember. Oh, Aaron Johansson. Sorry, what am I doing? I've got Aronson on
that's
my...
close enough. That works. Yeah,
that's a compound now. Aronson is in there. You can't spell Johansson without Aronson. The missing Aronson brother, Aaron Aronson. He said, my body has never played this many games. I'm young. I've not been able to recover. And I'm seeing a little bit of that in Brent Candle. He saw it at the beginning. And then just the relentlessness of the Premier League. I mean, the World Cup in the middle wouldn't help, but it just feels like his body needs, he needs weeks to recover and go again. I do not fear for Brendan. I do not doubt for Brendan. But God, that Nottingham Forest game at the weekend, who amongst us is not genuinely thrilled and, yes, a little fearful for that one. But that is, I mean, that is must-see. And as are all Leeds games for the rest of the season. And we are living, and we should never take it for granted, living remarkable bloody days in a remarkable way. Tommy, last word from you.
Yeah, so these are must-watch games, all this stuff. So next week, I'm flying to England to go to a Leeds United, Manchester United game. That will be Wes McKinney's home debut if he comes on, as you'd expect. This trip came together because my sister and brother-in-law, who are very big soccer fans, they were like, we need to go to Leeds. We need to. It was like the Mecca for, like,
promised land.
For them.
The promised land.
Yeah, like, you know, there's an American manager. There's two American, now three American players. There's Jack Harrison, who should be an honorary American for all the time he spent here at NYC. It's like, we have to go. And I was like, yeah, twist my arm. Let's go. Well, sure.
I love that story. It's a beautiful city. It's an incredible county. It's just, it's almost like its own republic, a different way of thinking, a different straight talking, no BS frame of mind. And God bless, the quicker Western understands that, and there is a learning curve, the mentality of that place, the as well as the footballing moment, and watching them soar is something we should never take for granted. Last word from me on the Everton thing. I am bereft. It's almost a footnote in terms of football stories, how crap they are. I want to raise money from a bunch of investors. Let's build the club from the ground up. Let's find a place in Liverpool. It's only 8 tiers in the pyramid. Let's enter at the bottom. 10 to 12 years, we'll be in the league. Let's return the club to the community that built it. Let's bloody rage against the machine. I want to end with a toast, raising the shot of your Meister to Tony Pulis, old school football manager. You might remember his work for Stoke. You know, he's a day's retiring from management. English football, Spanish Baratheon, a gent in a tracksuit, unafraid to head out his own player while naked in the shower. Google it. And like Billy Joel always said, only the good quit young. A true character in the early days of NBC's Premier League coverage. He was Brexit before there was Brexit. Long throws, long balls, 10 at the back. What it says on the tin, not. Hope see us like again. Oh, you, Sean Dyche. And before we go, this has been a joy to spend this time with you, Tom Bogart. You are an incredible man for your work. You bring such light to the American footballing community. Cannot wait for the new season to kick off for MLS on Apple. Truly a moment of, I hope, just incredible progress. But before we go, quick reminder about everything happening at Men in Blazers World Headquarters this week. Tomorrow, in just one more sleep, we'll drop out into the world. Our John Oliver mid-season pod special. I cannot wait to release that beauty into the world like a dove flying out of our hands from some perch high above the city. That'll also be coming to YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Putting out so much content on at the moment. Going to interview. Who are we interviewing tomorrow? We're interviewing, Patrick Vieira. Oh, the Crystal Palace manager and old friend. Quick shout out, we'll be wrapping up all the transfer window news involving Americans in our American State United newsletter, which flies tomorrow. You can get all your Conrad to Hull City news there. Subscribe at meninblazers.com. Until then, Tommy Bogues, you beautiful human being. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, Rod. You guys are legends.
and GFOP's courage. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.